There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1206 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Of course, you're a big part of the show, and your texts, your calls are welcome throughout the show. And we'll kind of set up things happening in hour number two of the show in just a little bit. But I want to get to our first interview of the show. And obviously, they are very busy in Washington right now. So let's go ahead and get rolling with Alabama Senator Doug Jones joining us now from Washington. Thanks for your time.
Hey, my pleasure, Sean. Thank you.
Hey, it's a lot to talk about. I do want to, before we get into what's happened here in the last 24 hours, let's talk about some things that are pretty darn positive here that I think you're going to get, and not, I'm not even going to say bipartisan, I'm going to say nonpartisan support for, and that is doing away with the military widows tax. Explain that. You've talked to us about it before, but set it up for folks down here in South Alabama. What is that?
Sure. You know, that's a big deal. It's done, by the way. We passed it. It is part of our national defense authorization. I'm sure the president's going to sign it. The widow's tax has been an offset. I mean, over the years, military members who have died from a service-related injury or death are entitled, their surviving spouses are entitled to certain VA benefits. And then there's a separate pot of money that they pay into. It's like additional insurance that they pay into that's been administered from the Department of Defense. This is their own money, Sean, that's going into this. It's not taxpayer money, unlike some of the VA benefits that we fund because of our service and our gratitude to these military members. The separate pot is money that these military families pay into, but when that military member dies or veteran dies, they offset each other dollar for dollar, and so these folks are not getting the full benefit. They're usually getting about 55%, and it costs most, I think, military surviving spouses an average of about $11,000 a year.
Wow.
And this has been on the books for a long time. For 18 years, there have been efforts. These military widows and spouses and groups have been pounding the halls of Congress for 18 years, trying to get somebody to really work to get this done. There have been bills introduced, but nobody has really put the campaign together to actually get it done until this year. And my friend from Maine, Senator Susan Collins, and I really, along with Congressman Joe Wilson, a Republican from South Carolina, really, we took it upon ourselves to really make sure that this happens this year. And we got 77 or 78 co-sponsors in the Senate. Joe was able to get over 370 or 80 in the House, and we were able to build momentum and get this eliminated for the first time now in 40 years. We're really putting our money where our mouth is to make sure that when we talk about our support for surviving military families and our support for veterans, that we are demonstrating it, and we're not just talking about it. We are demonstrating that commitment that we have to those who made the ultimate sacrifice for this country.
You've been talking, of course, we're talking about the NDAA, but as a member of the Armed Services Committee, y'all look at this stuff every day, and it's not just veterans. I saw something in there, right? A pay increase for active duty.
Yes, we've got the NDAA does a lot of different things. There was a pay increase for military because it really is the authorization for the Defense Department and any number of things. So there's a pay increase for all active duty military. There are so many things, and this was something I really tried to focus on in my priorities. It was, you know, we've got a lot of money coming in between Redstone Arsenal, Austell down in Mobile, the Anniston Army Depot, Maxwell Air Force Base. There's a lot of research and development and modernizing our military, but I also tried to do things for families, which includes this 3.1% increase in pay. It includes additional monies for impact aid, which is money that goes to school systems who help educate military kids. We've got special things for kids with disabilities. We tried to do all of those things to help families. Included in this is a big thing that Ivanka Trump has been pushing some, and I've worked with her on, and that is the paid parental leave, 12 weeks of paid parental leave for all federal civilian employees, which is going to be a really big deal to help try to retain and attract good, top-notch people into federal service.
I want to look more of what's been happening, too, in Washington with the appropriations package. I can get into a macro view and how I feel about deficit spending, but that may be a discussion for us for another day and maybe for everybody in Washington and versus me. But I did look at some of the breakouts here inside that $1.4 trillion appropriation package. What comes to the state of Alabama? I know you were talking about this. Also, your fellow Senator Richard Shelby talking about this as well. It's something in energy, water development portion, something that means good. It's good news for us down here on the coast.
Well, there's a lot of things that are going to be doing. Let me just throw out a couple things. You know, one, I got my cold case civil rights thing funded for the first year. That's going to be funded. We're going to start that. We've got money going in to help study the chronic wasting disease that deer hunters are so concerned mm-hmm. about. I think the specific money that you're talking about is the money that's going to help for the dredging
yes.
of the poor, port down there in Mobile Bay. That is going to be a huge economic development boon for the city of Mobile and also for the entire southeast Alabama to be able to get that Mobile Bay dredged to allow bigger ships. That is something that Senator Shelby in particular has been working on for many, many years, and this is, I think this bill is the crowning achievement for that, and I'll let that go forward.
Hey, you were telling me before we went on the air, when we were in the news break, what kind of money are we talking about for CWD research federally? This is a pretty big number.
Yeah, it's 1.72 million for some surveys to kind of try to map this and do some things to combat chronic wasting disease, and there's another $5 million that are part of the modernizing the Pittman-Robertson Fund. Mm-hmm. Which will go to help wildlife agencies conduct very, very important chronic wasting disease outreach activities, not just research, but we were talking about that, and I double-checked. It's going to help. It should get some money into the state of Alabama to try to help us with outreach activities. I think the state's really doing a really good job right now of bringing this to everyone's attention. This will help a lot. It's something that I think that we can do through the federal funds to try to get this done, because we're still hoping that we can stop that CWD before it hits Alabama deer.
Yeah, do you ever get a chance to talk to the senators from states that do have that CWD issue? And I, you know, if they're a big hunting state, what that means to it means to their economy.
Look, I don't know how the numbers in front of me, Sean, but you know that deer hunting in particular is a huge boost to Alabama's economy.
Yep.
There are people that come from other states that come into Alabama to hunt that in the Black Belt area, it's so important. It's a huge number, and if we start getting that and that could really devastate not just a way of life for so many people like me and others, me and my son and others that see that deer season as just a way of life for them, but also the economy for so many people that depend on that. So this was a really important step. You know, so Republican Senator Barrasso and I worked on this for the last year and a half to try to get this in, and we're both extremely happy that we were able to get this in to this appropriation bill.
All right. I want to look at one thing I saw in a note here. Maybe you can explain it. I mean, I understand the words I'm reading, but I didn't know timeline-wise, it's the Supporting Victims of Iranian Terrorism Act. What is that,
sure.
Senator? What's...
Well, it's kind of technical stuff. The bottom line is this. There are Iranian assets that have been frozen that victims, you remember the Marine Barracks explosion back in, gosh, I think it was 1983.
1983, yeah,
as a matter of fact. Those victims' families have been working with lawsuits, and there's has been a technical problem that is the courts have held up over $1 billion, almost $2 billion, I think, to not allow these victims to get to that. So this bill is going to make that technical correction to make sure that those assets that have been frozen, Iranian government funds, are available to these victims. And it also was written in such a way that I think 9/11 victims will also be able to benefit should they be able to show that the Iranian government was involved in that anyway. We work with both victims groups. Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican from Arkansas, and I were really the leading sponsors on that. And we've got some families in Alabama. I think there's at least 34 family members in Alabama that will benefit from the Beirut victims. It's the least we could do after so long. And we got the 9/11 victims, too, that we've been working with.
All right. I want to, before we wrap up here, I was thinking about this. I mentioned you a couple times on the show this week because I read a clip from an interview you did, I think, with CBS 42 in Birmingham, and asked about what your vote would be if the Senate's looking at these articles of impeachment, and we don't want to get, off in the weeds, when you will get them, when they will come from the House and get to the Senate. But if they do, you know, how you will vote. I've asked you this several times on this, if you'd ask for vote for removal. But if you can help me, because in your quote there from that CBS story, you said very similar thing that you said before. You want to look at, you know, more on the information, get more more time to read through that. But you also said in that impeachment is, and I'm paraphrasing here, so correct me, Senator, impeachment is bad for the country or it's not good for the country.
Sure. So look, you can only see how the country is being split right now. I mean, and part of that, quite frankly, Sean, is that we haven't got a complete picture. I mean, we've not seen all of the evidence. I've said all along this is a very serious matter. Unlike some of my colleagues who simply see this as a partisan matter, I've never seen it as a partisan matter, and I've implored both sides to come out of their partisan corners. It is impeachment of a president of the United States is never a good thing. You never want to see that that a president has conduct that even rises to the level of doing an investigation. But the fact is, this was a serious matter, and I do think it was appropriate for the House to conduct an investigation. You can argue about whether or not it was fair over there or not, but you know what? That's not for me to determine. That was the House version, and all I can do now is to do my duty as a senator. It's coming over here. It may be held a little bit to try to see where the rules are over in the Senate, but it's coming over here, and the only thing I can do now is to make sure that once it gets to the Senate of the United States, that it is a full and fair and complete process and trial. And that means it's got to be fair to the President of the United States, and it's got to be fair to the American public, and we make sure we have all the information. The last thing people want, I believe, in this country, they want final resolution, and they don't want to see in another year or so, if John Bolton's book comes out, that all of a sudden there's going to be information that's going to be damaging to the President or exonerating the President. That should come out now, whether it's Bolton or other witnesses. It needs to be complete. I think the American public, regardless of how they feel about it now, need and want and believe that we should have a complete trial.
Yeah, but, you know, listening to Mitch McConnell, I mean, he's saying, hey, that process in the lower body, in the House, was anything but measured or bipartisan. So why should I do this now? I know that Senator Schumer's tasking him with doing this way or that way, and he's saying, hey, you didn't give me the same kind of, you know, we weren't given, the president wasn't given that same kind of quarter in the House. Why should we do it in the Senate?
Well, I don't know what Senator McConnell is saying. You know, we are supposed to take a separate oath to do fair and impartial justice. That's what the oath will say. I don't quite frankly know how Senator McConnell, with a straight face, can take that oath after the comments that he has made, because he has said he's not. Senator Graham has said the same thing. Frankly, there's been some Democrats, if you read between the lines, they've said that they're not going to be impartial. So I'm perplexed. And the one thing thing that I don't think is appropriate for Senator McConnell or anyone else to say is to flip the argument in the House. The House didn't do a fair process. Their process wasn't fair, so therefore we're not going to make it fair either. That just doesn't make sense to me. I think we owe it to the American public and the American people, whether you agree with the president, whether you support him or not, whether you, however you feel about this right now, we have a duty, I believe, to have this to be a fair process, and that's what I'm hoping. And I'm hoping that Senator McConnell and Senator Schumer can get together and talk about this so it's fair to the president, it's fair to the American people, regardless of what happened in the House of Representatives.
Okay, because looking at it here, a lot of people back home will call me and say, hey, this is nothing but a political disagreement. Democrats do not like the policies of the president, and they're trying to punish or derail based on using impeachment as a tool. I think we've taken a step in a bad direction in this country, because I can see this pendulum swing back when all the people in control of different bodies in the White House are all different parties. This could come back, and I do not want our republic to be in a system of using impeachment as a political tool.
I completely agree with you, Sean. I am an absolutely agreement. But one of the problems, and let's be fair to both sides here, one of the problems that we've had that's made it this way is that the President of the United States decided to not let the people in the room who have firsthand knowledge about this testify. We've not seen any documents except transcripts, edited transcripts of two phone calls. And so there's really a little, you know, some to blame on everyone's part that this has become so partisan. I am hoping that once we get over the Senate is a different body. It truly is. I've seen it up here time and time again. You only look and see what happened in the last 2 weeks and all the bipartisan work that we've done on HBCUs and the appropriations process and the military widows tax, to see what can be done when people will sit down and talk to each other, not at each other. And that's what I'm hoping that we'll see. And it's a new day here, regardless of how people feel. It is a constitutional process that we are obligated to do. And I am actually, I got to tell you, I'm literally praying that the Senate proceeds, that everybody in the Senate proceeds with the best interest of the country and the Constitution in mind, not a political party or a particular person.
All right, Senator Jones, thank you for your time. I know you got to run. We'll get you back on the show very soon and talk more about this.
You got it, Sean. Thanks so much for having me. I always enjoy it.
Likewise, Senator Doug Jones joining us as we get started here on this edition of Midday Mobile. We'll grab some calls when we get back. Also coming up, we're talking about military and what happened in the NDAA. Speaking of the military, Team Fight or Die, we've talked about those veterans rowing their way. Second year now, the veterans team from Fight or Die rowing their way across the Atlantic. Well, they've got a satellite phone, and they've just told me they're going to call us coming up at 1 o'clock today. We're going to hear from them somewhere out in the middle of the Atlantic. Team Fight or Die. That's on the way. We'll check news next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1227 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, Little Friday. Friday Eve. Some people call this a Thursday style. Glad to have you along. 343-0106. 343-0106. You had PSA here from Chester on the text line. Just got a call from the power company. They said the power would be cut off if they did not get a payment over the phone. Did not fall for it, but some may. Thank you for the heads up there, Chester. You know what I do? Like, when I talk to my family members or whomever, maybe folks older than me, I say, assume everything you get from a phone number you don't know, someone you don't know, or from an email, everything is, I can't say that on air, is baloney, is not true, and then work backwards. So assume guilt and work backwards on that. It's probably the safe thing to do. All right, Heather says, I think we all know how Doug Jones is going to vote. He's talking around it, but he's already made up his mind. This whole impeachment thing has been anything but fair and just. Doug Jones talks out of both sides of his mouth. Tim says, lame duck. He also said, get that libtard off the radio. You know, it's funny, and Tim, you're not the only one that gets upset when Senator Jones is on the show. I'm not. I have to say this. I think he probably would vote with the other Democrats. Look what he did on the Kavanaugh thing. I wouldn't be surprised there. But it, you know, he's playing a game here too, looking at this, you know, his chances of reelection. But there's Jeff Poor brought this up the other day. And what I was going to say, Jim, just side note, I'm always going to bring people on that disagree on the radio. That's just how I do it. I do it differently. There's plenty of shows where they won't ever bring any opposing viewpoint on. There are plenty of shows that do that. You know, I'm a conservative guy, but I'm going to listen to what one of our senators. Listen, the other senator, the Republican, has an open invitation to be on the show. And I've extended that so many times. Over the last 10 years, he's come on, I think we're at one time during the campaign, one time. So, Tim, I've got an open door. If Senator Shelby wanted to come in, I would stop and put off whatever thing I had, but he could come on anytime. There's been an open invitation, and it's been nothing but crickets, okay? So maybe there's a very good reason that that's true, but, I mean, it's been nothing but crickets, and Senator Jones will reach out. So, yeah, but a side note here on what we talked to Jeff Poor about on Wednesday is maybe Doug Jones, look, this is like conjecture city, but it is interesting. If you wonder how he'll vote, because I said, man, if he wants any chance of getting reelected, he's probably not going to vote to remove the president. And Jeff said, well, that is if he thought he had a chance at winning as a senator. If he doesn't think he has a chance at winning in the general, which I think there's a lot to be argued that he doesn't have a chance to win in the general. Maybe he is going to vote with the Democrats, keep himself in good graces, and maybe move into another appointed position with a future administration. Something to think about. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5. It's Midday Mobile, y'all. What's up? Hey, website, fmtalk1065.com. All right, go over there. Let's do it now. If you're at a computer or safe place to do this, go to fmtalk1065.com. If not, when you get to a place where you can do this, go to the front page of the website. Right under the 1-800-GOT-JUNK logo, you'll see this is usually where our online opinion poll question is. Right now, for the month of December, this is where we run our voting for Alabamian of the Year. This is 3 years of doing it here at FM Talk 106.5. Y'all nominate the people, places, things, events that most moved the news cycle in Alabama in 2019. Then we put them into brackets, and you vote. And each day, you vote the top two move on. Okay. So today's this will be round one. First round, bracket 4 of 5. So then we'll start second round next week. Your choices today, fallen law enforcement officers, the Fight or Die Veterans Charity Rowing Team. We'll talk about that in a second. Rod Bramlett and longtime FM Talk 106.5 listener and caller Taxman. They're all in there, and a lot of people voting already. You can vote online, front page of fmtalk1065.com. Top two vote getters move on to next week's round. All right. Speaking of Team Fight or Die, I think this is cool. And I got to do this with Bryant Knight and the guys the first year, last year's voyage across the Atlantic. This year, year two team is out there rowing the Whoopi, which, by the way, that's the name of their 26-foot rowboat. They're rowing the Whoopi across the Atlantic. Remember, they left from La Gomera and the Canary Islands back on, like, December 8th and 6th, December 6th, I think. And now they're moving on out. And Marine, Purple Heart recipient, and rower on the Whoopi, Evan Stratton, is going to call us a little after 1 o'clock. We'll talk to him, and can't wait for that. They're going to check in with satellite phone, and we'll see what the progress has been like and how everybody's doing out there. So that's coming up shortly. Also, Dale Leash from Landyap joins me coming up in just about 7 minutes. So we've got a lot to talk about with him. Speaking of which, one of the things that has people talking, 3:30 today, the Mobile City Council Finance Committee will meet to talk about $3 million in funding for Amtrak, basically for passenger rail service into Mobile. That is the it came up Tuesday at the Mobile City Council meeting, and it would be as much as a way to as much as $3 million, but maybe not. In other words, the $3 million, if they decide to do it, would be a subsidy, right? So there's $33 million coming from the feds. Our portion around here would be $3 million. That would be to subsidize if the ridership isn't as much as they think it is, or if the ticket prices are lower. Okay, so I guess $3 million is the exposure on the maximum, but with ridership and ticket fares rising, that number comes down. That's the way I understand it. So Mobile City Council Finance Committee meeting on that today. I guess they will make a recommendation back to the rest of the city council. So we'll keep our eyes on that coming up this afternoon. Talk more about it tomorrow. All right, I mentioned this for a second with Senator Jones when I was talking to him, but let me go back through, because one of the provisions. So let's go back and talk about what's happened. There's so much that has gone on that has not gotten attention in Washington because everything's focused on this impeachment. Remember that's not their job, not their main job, right? I mean, it's part of the job, but their main job is to work on things that directly affect the American people. Now, some will argue this impeachment thing is, but they have gotten a few things done, although they've been spending a lot of money. And I know it's not a popular opinion, so I'll save it for another day, that we're spending money now with, you know, Republicans are spending money just as fast as Democrats. I mean, it just depends on where you spend it, right? None of them are, that's not true. There are members of the House and the Senate, Republicans, that are about fiscal conservatism, but they are in the minority. It's mostly about where the money gets spent. So, appropriations package passed the House, and it's on the way to the Senate right now, is $1.4 trillion. $1.4 trillion. And on the Senate side, that's our Senator Richard Shelby, who is head of appropriations. Remember, I talked about how big a deal this is. He has been on Twitter talking about different aspects of the bill. He's selling the spending, right? He's talking about why it's good for Alabama. And a couple things in here I want to point out. Inside the energy, and this comes from Todd Stacey over at Alabama Daily News. He said, tucked inside the energy and water development portion of the bill is a new regional dredge program for the Central Gulf Coast. And all the Army Corps of Engineers is receiving $651.5 million more funding, more than they got before in this year's budget, with a mandate to use revenue to, quote, advance American competitiveness and export capabilities, end quote. Well, what does that mean for us around here? That's the port, right? It means Alabama could very well be on its way to finally completing the deepening and widening for the Port of Mobile. And that's so I don't know how much of the $651 million comes to Corps of Engineers here. I'm not sure. I'm sure that'll be worked out going forward. Of course, it has to make it through the Senate first. And Todd points out here, rightly so, because this is something that came up during the toll debate around the I-10 toll. He said it's not a direct funding allocation like the good old days of earmarks. Remember, that changed, and that's something we all got to get used to. That changed like 16 years ago, 17 years ago, where our representatives in Washington can't specifically earmark money from the federal treasury to a specific project. They have to have a go-between. And then when we were asking that about the toll, remember we learned the money couldn't go specifically to the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project. It could go to LDOT, and then LDOT was in line to then allocate that money. Well, I think it's the same thing here, that you can't, even Senator Shelby can't say, I'm going to put, you know, there's $40 million goes specifically for the deepening and widening of the channel and the work at the port. It has to go then so this money goes to the Corps of Engineers, but you see this line here says, to advance American competitiveness and export capabilities. So you give the money to a third party, but you put a mandate, I guess, on the money. That's the way they're getting around it. But this is, the Corps will be responsible for allocating the funds and contracting the dredging plans. But it's got to be good news for Mobile going forward on that. So I think that was of note here. Maybe that finally will be the money needed. And, you know, the idea is to have the ship channel deepened and widened, right? So those big tankers that go through the Panama Canal, now with that expansion, can come up and come into the Port of Mobile. So that's what that's all about. Which, by the way, side note, I have not talked about this in 4 or 5 months. And if Mayor Dolphin Island, Jeff Collier's listening, and others, I've not forgotten about it. Lord knows I've been talking about it for years like y'all. Sure hope that we get this money in, to start the deepening and widening of the ship channel. We do this work. Please take the spoil sand and put it on Dolphin Island. I know that the Corps has a practice in the past of taking it and putting it offshore in the beneficial use area. I can tell you, just I'm not a, you know, not a geologist or whatever. Who would be a what would be the study of sand movement? Which I just, as a good old boy, I know the sand moves from the east to the west and to the north in the Gulf of Mexico. That's the rotation of how sand moves. But I would sure ask if you would put it on Dolphin Island, because that sand wants to get to Dolphin Island. And if all things were natural, that sand would get to Dolphin Island. I'm pro ship channel. I'm pro commerce. Just when you dredge it, instead of taking it back offshore to try to do like a bank shot, you know, and pull, instead of just putting it where it needs to be, you're trying to bank shot it onto Dolphin Island. Let's just put it on the east end and there along the front beach. Just to, y'all got to pay to dredge it anyway, right? You got to pay. We're paying to dredge it. We're keeping the ship channel deep and wide. That's good. Let's take that sand instead of just kind of like hoping to put the masse on it and get it on. Let's just go ahead and put it on the island. So pump it right there at the east end of the island or on the south side. Let's just put it where it needs to be. Be good for all of us, because that sand that would be on Dolphin Island anyway. I'm not creating something artificial like we did with the trying to recreate Sand Island. Remember the old Sand Island out by the lighthouse that, because of the ship channel, wouldn't stay and all that sand went away, when you could have just taken that sand and put it on Dolphin Island. All right, coming back, I want to talk to Dale Leash with Lanyap. I want to talk about a couple stories, one of them kind of hand in glove with what we're talking about right now. He has a story over at lanyapmobile.com. Port Director Jimmy Lyons, who's been on with us over the years, announced his retirement at the end of 2020. The man who has been over the port for quite some time and seen some very big changes at the Port of Mobile is announcing his retirement. So that's a very big deal. And also, yeah, Amtrak funding, what does this mean? What's the chances of having $3 billion come out of the city to finance this going forward? We'll talk about that with him coming up next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:47, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Checking in with our buddy Dale Leash from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And a little break from an extremely busy day. Thanks, Dale.
No, thank you for having me.
I want to get, let's go, we'll transition into the story, because I was just talking about the amount of money in this, the appropriations bill coming out of the House heading to the Senate, and I know Senator Shelby has been tweeting about all the things. Well, okay, let's be frank. I got to do this. Somebody in Senator Shelby's office has been tweeting for him about all these things out of the appropriations bill that could work for work for Alabama, and then specifically for us, $651 million to the Corps of Engineers that would mean money, we guess, for the deepening and widening of the Port of Mobile. So we're talking about that. Then I see your story, speaking of Port of Mobile, that longtime head of the Port of Mobile, Jimmy Lyons, is retiring.
In 2020, it'll be 23 or 24 years at the port. So,
not only is that, you know, a couple decades worth, but the changes that have happened in the port, you list those in your article here. That's significant.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that Jimmy would tell you he's most proud of is maybe the container port business, because when he took it over, it was mainly a coal and forest products port, and now they have a pretty thriving container port business. He said when he started to talk about that with folks, the people in the industry looked at him like he was crazy, but he's kind of proved them wrong over time.
And for people to understand how the Port of Mobile works, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, it's, people get the idea that it's part of the Alabama state government, but it's not, right? I mean, it's private, or it's quasi-private.
Well, it used to be. That's another thing that has benefited our port, they would tell you. People like Jimmy Lyons would tell you, is that it used to be an appointed position in the governor's cabinet, the director of the port. And with Jimmy's hire, they were able to go outside of the appointment process, and the board actually hired him. And people who've been with the port a long time have said that's made a huge difference. So, yeah, it used to be more a part of the government, and now it's more like a quasi-governmental entity.
Yeah, so instead of having a person over the port that just happened to support the right person who ran for governor, right? You can get a professional in this.
You get somebody who's been in the industry for a while and somebody who's not just, right, like you said, somebody who hasn't just, like, donated large sums of money to a campaign or whatever. That's absolutely right.
So I guess the search now is going to be the same thing. They're going to, I guess, go look to, if you use some unpopular language, they're going to go poach somebody who's good at this from some other port.
Yeah, and they've hired a national search firm to look into it, and they're going to start really looking into candidates the next year. And like I said, he's going to be on until the end of 2020. Hopefully enough time to get somebody in there, get him trained, get him up to speed with what the Mobile port does, and then he's going to, you know, retire to the beach like
yeah.
You said he would.
Yep, heading to Dolphin Island full time.
That's right.
So this sentence here that you wrote maybe needs to be emblazoned on things down around the port so people even here at home know how big it is. You said, the port itself employs 530 people, operates a Class 3 railroad with 8 locomotives, 75 miles of track, and 100 employees. Wow.
That's right.
That's big. That's a big employer.
Yeah, and not only that, it is, you know, it provides for you know, thousands of other jobs. If you think about it, I mean, you've got Amazon, you got Walmart, all of those distribution centers coming online, and a large part of the reason for that is the container port. So I mean, the port is vital to the economics, the economic identity of this area. So not only are you talking about direct employees for the port, but you're also talking about, you know, indirect employees. And Jimmy's done a really great job of kind of managing all that, you know, on top of all the other port stuff he does. He's got to manage a railroad too, so it's a job.
That's for sure. Well, and you can feel the pivot and the transition in this from that story of yours to another story of yours with the Southern Rail Commission asking the city of Mobile to fund Amtrak's return. I know that this afternoon the Finance Committee is going to be talking about this with the City Council.
That's right. The Finance Committee is going to kind of investigate what all this means, but the Southern Rail Commission is looking at a total of a $3 million commitment, and it wouldn't be all up front. That'd be over 3 years or so. So we're not talking about like, oh, you got to give us $3 million now, or you're not getting a railroad. They just need the commitment, and basically what they're doing is they're trying to go around and find a solution to the governor who said that she wouldn't put up these funds for this purpose. So while they wouldn't say this publicly, you know, they're kind of circumventing Governor Ivey in this respect.
Because people asked when the story first came up on Tuesday. They said, hey, well, didn't this involve the governor last year? And I remember it did, and the governor balked at providing the money. Now, she made the excuse, I think, that she did not get a request from the representation in that district, which I think was Adeline Clark, that she didn't get a request, and therefore she didn't move forward. But, yeah, we can read between the lines. Governor Ivey, for a couple different reasons, I've heard, doesn't want to do this.
So the federal grant that would set all this in motion needs a local match, and that local match can come from, I mean, anyone. You, Sean, with all of your big money from the radio, you could write a check for $3 million and get Amtrak here.
Oh, I could write the check. I just don't know if it would. I could guarantee it wouldn't cash, but I could write it.
But so they're just looking for a local match, and the county and the city are looking to team up to sort of not only do some of the infrastructure needs, but also this $3 million commitment from the city specifically.
All right, and it's a match, but it is, like you talked about here, it's a worst-case scenario. In other words, it's $3 million maximum, but if things work out, it could be less.
Yeah, you're just basically the $3 million
subsidization,
yeah. Would subsidize the operations. And the SRC claims that they, or this is actually Amtrak. Amtrak has a model that they say is very conservative that said that if the trains are filled up to a 40% capacity, and each rider, you know, spends $18.33 per trip, then that $3 million would come into effect. If any more money than that is made off of the passengers, then you're looking at less than $3 million. And that's kind of where it works.
So the break even.
Then I don't know.
So the break even. Okay, now it helps me understand that. So the break even is 40% capacity at $18 and something, right? Per 1833.
Yeah, right, exactly. And they're looking at ticket prices for one way trips to New Orleans being between $28 and $35. So you're looking at more than $18 right there, whether or not somebody spends money on food or beverage.
You know, I think this, a lot of people, listen, I deal with this, and I've been open about this. I'm split because, you know, part of me just loves the romance and the idea of train travel. I think it's cool. I like it. Yeah. At the same time, I've watched our city spend money on all kind of stuff over the years. Yeah. It might not be the best move. I think people would pay $28 to go to New Orleans. I mean, that for sure, for what gas costs. But how long, I mean, the question I think is hanging out there is how long does it take? I mean, if it could be just as fast as driving your car, then I think you get a lot of people on there. If it's some 5 or 6 hours, then I don't think they show up.
And you got to keep in mind that this is, you know, it starts in Mobile. It stops in Pascagoula.
Yeah.
It stops in
Bay
St. Louis and Biloxi. So you're talking about stops. You're talking about, you know, it's going to be a lot longer than it would be to drive there.
That's my worry.
You know, at the same time, you don't have to pay for parking, or, you know, you don't have to worry about hitting somebody on Bourbon Street. Yeah. So,
not with your car. I mean, you might still get in a scrap. Yeah. But, I mean, it's...
You might punch them.
Sure. That's right.
Sure.
But listen, if they have the... And it can be. I mean, it can be a little bit longer than it would drive, you know, take you to drive. But
right.
If it starts being half a day, you know, half a daylight
right.
day to get there, I think that's... It's worrisome. I mean, yes, the charm of going once or twice to go see the sights, and I love to ride the train and all that stuff.
Sure.
But if you're going to fill it up, you know, twice a day, or at least get 40% capacity twice a day, it's got to be an efficient means of travel.
Absolutely. And people are going to want to have to, you know, people are going to want it to be, be an advantage to
mm-hmm.
them. And you're right. I don't know if a 6-hour trip to New Orleans is really going to attract a lot of folks. One of the scenarios where I saw that it might be helpful was, my bachelor party. I got married 5.5 years ago.
Yeah.
My bachelor party was in New Orleans. So
it would have been better for everybody.
Scenario.
Yeah, it'd been better for everybody to have a train.
Yeah, just get all get all your friends on the train, and you can pre-drink on the way up there, and then just be completely loaded by the time you get to New Orleans.
I mean, believe me, I fight it because I really do like it. I mean, I'm a cheerleader for the train here, but at the same time, I want to be an honest arbiter. And in that honest arbiter, I want to say, well, but let's make sure we're making the right decision, you know, dollars
absolutely,
wise.
Absolutely.
All right.
You know, $3 million is something some money that could be spent, you know, in other needs for the city. So you really have to weigh that against, you know, sort of the novelty and the use that the train will, you know, get.
That's for sure. You can check this story out and a whole bunch more from Dale Leash over at lanyapmobile.com, or they can pick up the new Lanyap. Y'all are out on streets now.
We are. We are. It's all about, the cover story is all about cybersecurity. So, yeah, pick it up, read it. We'd really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you, and Merry Christmas if I don't see you beforehand.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Sean.
All right, Dale Leash with Lanyap checking in. We're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. Speaking of cybersecurity, you can go back and get the podcast of this show from earlier in the week. And Dalton, we can figure out. That was, I think, on Tuesday's show. And it was hour number two on Tuesday's show. It takes me a second. I'm getting older. Hour number two on Tuesday's show, when my buddy Abe Harper from Harper Technologies jumped on to talk about cybersecurity and what's going on with the takeover of the city of Pensacola's digital infrastructure, New Orleans as well. Hey, real cool conversation. Check that podcast out and tell me what you think. All right, coming back, they're checking in by satellite phone from the middle of the Atlantic. Team fight or die.